What was the biggest thing behind the decision to join Island Records? What was the band's mindset there?
Yeah, well, we hadn't been, we lived out the full life of our contract with Epic Records, which when all was said and done was about 17 years with them. And we didn't know how we were really going to proceed into the future. You know, we had had a particularly, I don't know if the right word is, it was a challenging last part of our career with the last part of the cycle with not going to land between the label and our management and interpersonally in the band. Everything was sort of uncertain to put it lightly. So we decided that taking a break was a really important thing for us so that, you know, we just wouldn't implode around all of the stuff that was going on. So the label deal came to an end and we were off of our label and we kind of were musing with the idea of going at it independently. And when I did my side project, Sons of the Sea, I did that independently and it was a lot of fun, but it was also a sort of crash course education in how much work it is to run your own record label and to do everything independently, not only like the actual groundwork and the legwork that needs to be done, but also just financially it was pretty wild to take that on again. So I sort of brought some of that information into our conversation collectively with Incubus, and that wasn't the only reason, but you know, we just sort of collectively put our heads together and decided that it would be best for us to have the help of a record label for this new project. So we kind of talked to a few different labels, and then we ended up sitting down with David Massey and the team with Island, and you know, we had history with David Massey from years and years ago with Epic Records, and then so much of the current Island Records team was from Epic Records when we had a really great sort of working rapport with them. So it was very much like sorry, I'm just pouring some water. It was very much like a revisiting of old sort of good times with a record label when we decided to sign with Island. Sorry, that was a long answer.
That's okay. What was the creative process behind the new EP? How did you guys put the tracks together?
We, you know, it's kind of funny how the whole thing came about because even with getting signed and everything, we were still very much taking a break, quote unquote, from, you know, actively being Incubus and being on the road and everything. And then I was supposed to be on this sort of Broadway musical tour, Jesus Christ Superstar. And I was going to be gone all summer doing that. And so there were no plans to record with Incubus or anything. That show got canceled. And then right at the same time, a really amazing studio space opened up on the west side of L.A. And it was such a good opportunity. And then the serendipity of the show I was supposed to be on not happening, Michael and I started to kind of like muse, like maybe this is some weird cosmic sign that we should be making music again. So we kind of just set up our stuff in this studio and just kind of started, you know, farting around and jamming with music. And a lot of really cool stuff started to happen really fast, as if there was some kind of like, there were tons of ideas already just sort of waiting to be birthed to life. So we kind of just we hadn't written music together in a handful of years. And so what happens is I think that we just put our heads together and stuff just happens. Magical.
Speaking of which, how did Absolution Calling come together? What inspired that song? What do you think was the driving force behind it?
You know, it's funny how songs get written. It's never the same twice. There are some mechanics of it that are always very similar. It's like there's a riff or, you know, a drum beat or a melody or something that usually sparks the initial idea. But in in this case, Ben Kenny, you know, our very talented bass player, had this bass riff of the one that you hear in the verses of the song, and he played it, and the guys recorded a really kind of basic demo of just the bass, drums, and guitar. And I don't even think it had chorus music yet, but I was actually in Bali. I was surfing in Bali and wandering around looking for waves with friends of mine, and they emailed it to me. So I got the email and I listened to the track, and I called it the Cure riff, because it sounded the way the bass sounded. It sounded like an old Cure song or something.
Nice.
And then it immediately kind of inspired a lot of sort of imagery in my mind. I think the setting I was in Bali also probably helped with that. And so I just, usually when I'm writing lyrics and writing melodies, I'm reacting to two things. Number one, my sort of immediate environment, and then number two, the sort of imagery that gets evoked from the riff that I'm presented with. So in this case, it's sort of called to mind a very recent experience that I have had that was very hard to describe in linear terms. So when I have a hard time describing something conversationally, it usually is a good opportunity to try and describe it poetically in song. So that's sort of what happened.
The video is a ton of fun. It's like West Side Story meets Bad with like that Incubus edge to it. How much fun was it to put that video together?
Your description of it is actually kind of exactly what we were going for.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm glad it came across. It was one of the most fun videos I think that we've ever made. Probably more so for Ben, Chris, and Jose than anybody, because all those guys ride motorcycles, like, religiously.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun for me just because I grew up loving Quadrophenia, and I grew up loving Michael Jackson and Michael Jackson videos, and my parents sort of weaned my brothers and I on West Side Story, so it was like this, this great confluence of references sort of smashed together. We had a really great time making it. We actually, that's one thing that we've gotten pretty good at over the years, is number one, working with directors who are friends and also understand our abilities, but also we've learned to create environments almost everywhere that we go and everything that we do that are fun and weird, and people like want to be there, and mm-hmm. we like to work with people who really want to be there and not just sort of like, you know, people who are trying to collect a check. And there's a lot of goodwill in the videos and the projects that we do.
Also, too, like you said, too, there's a lot of references and stuff. I'm a big video game guy, and I'm not sure if I'm pretty sure it was Defender that somebody was playing in the beginning. And I just wanted to ask, because you guys have been around so long, and you guys have kind of been around at the same time as this genesis of the video game industry, would you guys ever consider, like, really dedicating a ton of tunes to a video game? Do you guys play video games? Like, do you ever think about hearing your tunes in a game?
Yeah, I mean, that is a very astute observation. Like, we have definitely emerged, and a lot of our formative years as kids were at the same time as mm-hmm. the video game industry was coming up. I did not play as many video games as many of my friends growing up. I spent most of my childhood, like, outdoors, but I did play, like, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out kind of religiously at one point.
Nice.
And my brothers and I, like, we loved that game. You know, a handful of other games and stuff, but more recently, you know, the guys at Incubus have been, over the years, kind of properly obsessed with Halo. And certain other games, and I know that a bunch of the guys in the band actually, and I'm not going to name any names, just the same dude that love riding motorcycles. play all kinds of games online, and they tell me about how, like, 10-year-old kids will, like, come in online and just blow them away and talk the craziest shit to them while they're, like, destroying them. to me, that's really kind of awesome and funny. But we actually did some music for Halo, I think it was Halo 3, if I'm not mistaken. And little bits and pieces here and there, but I honestly think that it would be amazing to, you know, kind of in the way that certain musicians are hired to score a film, that in and of itself would be amazing. It's something that we would love to do again. We've done music companies, but that's a really cool experience. It would be really fun to work from the ground up with a video game designer and create the entirety of the music for it. So that's a really good idea. I hope that we get to do that one day.
What was the mentality around the ideology around making Trustful the title track on this EP? How important is that song to this EP? And again, how did you guys come up with it?
It was one of the first tracks that we wrote. There were a couple of tracks that kind of that came forth sort of right around the same time. Trustfall, musically, lyrically, and you know, and a lot of the imagery that it sort of calls forth felt a little bit like, it just felt like a sort of centerpiece for where we were at that exact moment, which is only, you know, a few months ago at this point, but things move so fast when you're in that kind of creative headspace in the studio. So Trustfall really felt like a creative centerpiece for where we were and where we are as a band. And then we started playing with the idea of releasing two EPs instead of doing the traditional kind of album thing, which we've always done in the past. And for any number of reasons, not the least of which is that nobody really buys whole albums anymore. They're just buying singles like that. Like if we could condense the package somehow and maybe like spread it out and have this opportunity to sort of pay homage to the way that we sort of came up listening to music, which literally was side A and side B. And there was this time, I don't know how old you are, but there was this time for what felt like a pretty long time where listening to an album was, it was this experience where you had like the first act, and that was side A. And then you would take the needle, you know, off of the record and turn the record over, and then you'd have like this whole other like act two, side B. So that's kind of what we're pointing at with this concept.
Yeah, man. Like I grew up in the I'm a '90s kid, so I'm 30. I'm gonna be 32 soon, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Like I'd put a cassette or a record on, and then listen to it the entire way through, and very very different experience from music now, to say the very least.
It's true. It's not to say one is better or worse than the other. It's
just different.
Sort of, it's a difference in the experience. And so in this sense, we are kind of, we're playing for the audience as much as that feels comfortable to do, and that we're releasing something that's shorter than we normally would. But then we're also pointing forward there, but then we're kind of pointing backwards to the side A, side B thing. So it's like our cake and eating it too kind of thing. The thing that I'll learn over.
Yeah. All right, let's have a little bit of fun. Considering the band has so many different influences and your sound is so eclectic, what's a song on your iPod or your iPhone that you love that has influenced you tremendously, but you're kind of ashamed to tell anybody?
That's a good question. Wow. I don't have a ton of stuff that I'm ashamed of, but I think
Or people wouldn't expect,
stuff
you know?
Stuff that might surprise some people or not, I don't know. I actually listen to very little, I guess what you could call contemporary music when I'm at home in my house. Like there's very little kind of people singing in English and playing a traditional drum kit or even like a drum machine when I'm listening through the Sonos speakers at my house. It's mostly Indian classical music, like ragas. Wow. And I love Afrobeat music when I'm at home. And my girlfriend grew up studying dance, and so whenever there's Afrobeat playing at our house, like she'll get around the house, and I like providing an environment and creating an environment that's conducive to hip shaking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So stuff like that. And I'm definitely not ashamed to say that. I guess it's probably maybe something that most people wouldn't know about me and my music tastes. Classical music when I'm at home. I also I read this book called The Secret Life of Plants a couple of years ago, and it truly affected the way that I look at like trees and houseplants and shrubs and bushes and things like that. So in the book, it stated and had a bunch of research to back it up that plants respond to music and certain kinds of music in particular. And it said that classical music and Indian classical music seemed to really stimulate plants and plant growth. So I have all these plants all over my house now, since I'm a little bit of a jungle. And the plants do love it. They love it when they play Indian classical music. Like, they grow towards the speaker and stuff like that. It's
nice. Pretty cool. That's crazy. How do you want to...
It actually makes perfect sense.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, they kind of respond the same way human beings do. Like, when they want to be, when you enjoy something, you want to be close to it, so they feel the same exact way.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Considering that, you know, all of the albums you guys have produced over the years, they all have, you know, they all elicit certain types of memories. They all have their own little legacy in one way or another. How do you want people to look back on these EPs over the next couple of years? How do you want them to be remembered?
Really interesting question. Well, you know, having never really pondered that idea, I'm going to kind of throw the first thing that comes into my mind at you, and I guess that would be that. I guess I would hope that it felt like it was sort of a side B to our creative career. You know, that there was the first 20-something years of our career provided what it has provided aesthetically and musically and culturally, et cetera, et cetera. And then right around 2015, this band Incubus started releasing a new set of music that started creating new memories, but in a way that was maybe surprising and enthralling and exciting to their longtime listeners. It's like I'm writing my own epitaph right now. It's kind of funny.
Nice. Bottom line, why do you think someone should pick up this EP? If they're a fan of the band, if they've only liked a song or two, why do you think someone needs to have this EP in their hands or on their digital device?
That is a really cool question. I could think of tons of reasons. Even though I'm a pretty terrible salesman, I would say that we're one of the last bands, we're one of like a handful of bands that was reared in a time when people still learned how to play instruments and still hung their craft and, you know, were embracing technology but not abusing technology. And so for, you know, in so many ways, what people are hearing when they're listening to recordings of us is actually how we sound. There's not a lot of trickery involved. And I personally think that's pretty cool. And so what's funny, there's a realization I've been having recently, all of us in the band, and we've been realizing that even though, you know, we're still relatively young men, you know, we're all kind of in our late 30s, and so, but we're kind of figuring out how decidedly old school we are at this point. And I feel like 20 years ago, it took a lot longer for a band to become quote-unquote old school. But like I said before, because of the fact that we write the songs that we perform the songs that we write, and it's us playing the instruments and recording them. Just those simple facts make us kind of, I think that's cool. So if a potential sort of record buyer out there, here's my pitch, if they want to feel cool, they'd buy the new Incubus EP. Like I said, terrible salesman.
That's all right. You did a good job.
I think that's why we're worth a major label, but then do the sales.
There you go. Last question for me. You kind of segued into it beautifully. You guys have done so much in music, but you're still, you know, by in the big scheme of things, you're babies. You're, you know, you're 39 years old. You're still a young guy. So my question is, what is it that you really still want to get accomplished? Like your musical so bucket list.
I would really love for us to. I'd really still love for us to make music for films, like in a more grand way, not just a song or two here and there. I'd love to like for Incubus to be the score of a film. You know, do you ever see the movie Highlander?
Yes.
In the 80s?
Yes. Oh, you guys want to be like Queen. I love it.
Yeah, that was so sweet. Now Queen like wrote songs for them. Actually became kind of hit songs for Queen, but they everybody heard them first in this crazy radical time travel sword wielding immortal movie Highlander. It's like it's, you know what I mean? Like there's really cool shit out there to do. You know, we're very sort of other things. We're very collaboration like. We haven't done a lot of collaborations really of any kind. Mm-hmm. There's like two, I think, that we've done of the collaborate with other artists, but I think it would be really funny if we never been make a kind of award winning band. You know, I think the awards we've won are ones that they had to give to us because of, you know, Fair Play and showing. So it would be funny if we like won the Nobel Peace Prize for uniting all of humanity in the form of a song before we ever like won a Grammy or something like that. That would be kind of funny and ironic. So there's lots for us to do. Oh, we want to be the first band on the moon too. So there's that.